You're tuned into the Lawn and Garden Hour of the Rosie on the House Show. Get expert advice on any plant, irrigation, or landscape question you have by dialing 1-888-ROSIE-4U.
That make you want to jump around on your basil right there, won't it?
Absolutely.
Here with Julie Murphy from the Farm Bureau and John J. Harper from Harper's Nursery to take your calls on anything pertaining to landscape or gardening or farming. All right, Mike, let's see if we can bring Brad in. He's got a question on a topic that we personally consider like one of our little soapbox topics. Brad from Chandler, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, man. So what kind of project you got going on there?
Well, for years I've had vegetable gardens growing out of Rubbermaid tubs and buckets and various other things, and it's not very impressive to have people over and go look at my garden of plastic. So we're looking to finally get real raised beds and start growing vegetables. And we're going to get the bricks and start building them up and all that fun stuff, but wondering if I'm too ambitious to think that it's actually going to work for this planting season.
Okay. Well, that's one of the advantages of raised gardening is the fact that you don't have to really try and improve the soil and build the soil up. You're just going to use a soil mix, pretty much once you've got the gardens built, and depending on maybe how deep they are and how big they are, you can go in there with some, a good blend of soil. Probably you might be wanting to buy it in bulk if they're very big from, one of the landscape material places like, Pioneer or somebody like that that will blend you a soil. You'll need to add some fertilizer to it, some nutrients, some type of all-purpose fertilizer and maybe some gypsum. But generally, those soils are pretty darn productive just right off the bat. I generally also recommend maybe that last inch or two to get something like Mel's mix or a good potting soil or something out of a bag and just do a couple inches so you don't have to spend, a fortune trying to fill these whole raised gardens with that type of soil. And, man, you're just good to go.
Now, John J., if I'm engineering the perfect raised garden, I'm starting with a Bellegarde paver stackable wall system. What am I putting? I'm thinking to keep the gophers out, I'm going to put down some kind of hardware cloth. I'm going to put down heavy expanded metal. I'm going to put a couple layers of something on the bottom. Then I'm going to put a geotech cloth in there. Then I'm going to run it up the back of the walls. Then I'm going to fill it with soil. And now I've got perfect control. Nothing can
irrigation.
Get in there. Well, yeah.
An irrigation
so,
system.
I knew I forgot something.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have an irrigation system in mind. I'm not going to hand water.
Amen.
So,
absolutely.
No, that's pretty much it. And, of course, if you have, depending on where you live, the gophers may or may not be an issue. If not, just, probably some weed mat or weed barrier, like you mentioned.
Okay.
And that's not even necessary. If where you're putting it is pretty bare ground and it hasn't had a lawn or, a grassy situation or a lot of weeds, you may not even need that. So it's not real complicated.
And in designing that raised planter, you want it just high, and you don't want it too high. You don't want it too low. I like it just about perching level.
Well, it depends on your age.
It's getting
the older we get, the higher they get, because we don't want to bend over, right? Or we want to be able to sit on the edge of it and do it, or maybe have it bench height or. So you need about 6 inches minimum of good soil, and you'd be okay. That's minimum, but that's okay. So anything at least 6 inches or more. Now, the higher you get, obviously the more material it takes to fill it. And that's where you get into the strategy of, you only need about 6 or 8 inches of really good soil. So maybe you buy some less expensive material.
Sure.
And put in the first layer or two of that, and then start layering it or go on top of it with some really good stuff. So depending on how deep it is, but like I said, the higher it is up off the ground, the less stooping and bending. And you also want to take into consideration how wide you're going to make
that's
it.
That's really important.
If you can access it all the way around from all sides, that isn't quite as difficult. But if it's one-sided, it's up against the wall or the fence or something, remember, you got to reach in there, clear through there. So you may not want to make it too wide that you can't reach all the way across.
The other thing about raised gardens, planter beds, it's so easy just to take some PVC half-inch pipe and create a little, like, covered wagon rib cage, you know, on it.
And that'd be another thing, before you fill it, put some sleeves in, you know, spaced out maybe 4 feet on center so that you can then slide a smaller diameter PVC down into those sleeves and make a hoop out of them real easy. It's real easy to do.
Makes it real easy. And that, and a 200 PSI half-inch PVC pipe, I mean, you'll get 5 or 6 years out of that. Costs next to nothing.
And they're very inexpensive to buy. And then you can put either your bird netting or your shade cloth, or if it's cold, you can put some clear poly plastic over it and make a little greenhouse out of it. Real easy to do.
Raised beds, it is absolutely the way to go. Julie, at Farm Bureau, y'all are doing a little bit about school outreach right now, aren't you? What kind of programs have y'all got going on touching the kids?
All sorts of exciting stuff. We've just published, thanks to Katie Akins, she coordinates our ag education program in my department, Arizona's Ag Mags. And it's a fruit and vegetable one. You open up the center of it, and it's all geared to kids. We really concentrate on K through 6th grades, but we go all the way up to high school. You open up this latest Ag Mag, and it's got the four seasons of our fruits and vegetables because, of course, we need to get our kids to eat more fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
And it's got some activities on it, and it's a real exciting program.
How do you get your hands on that?
You contact Katie Akins, Katie Akins at azfb.org is their email, and teachers can ask to see if they can have a kit come into their class, and it will include these. We actually have 100,000 of them printed, so we'll have a lot of children reached with this, and hopefully we'll help parents convince their kids they have to eat more fruits and vegetables.
Well, isn't it more fun to eat something you actually grew with your own two hands?
Hey, Julie, how about homeschool families? Can they get their hands on that?
All they have to do is the same thing, email Katie, and we can work something out. We also are putting it up on the web so they can download it. That's probably the best way to access it. And then we're also helping promote Extension, the different extensions, county extensions, their farm-to-school programs, including planting a garden, because it goes back to your point, Rosie. If the kids grow their own fruits and vegetables, they'll most likely eat them. So they'll want to try and say, hey, and my Brussels sprouts taste better than anybody else's, or whatever the vegetable is.
Probably not Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what? They may try to eat them if they grow.
I do too, but I didn't as a kid. I don't think you'll find many kids who love them.
It's probably true.
I love it.
All right, let's get back to the phone and see if we can bring Ryan into the conversation, calling from Chandler, also with a vegetable question for our team here, Julie Murphy from Farm Bureau and John Jay from Harper's Nursery. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning, John Jay. Good morning, Rosie. It's good to talk to you.
Good talking to you, my friend.
I'm a big fan and advocate of the raised garden. I followed your example to a T. Got beautiful rose beds and a vegetable garden and a raised bed with Belgard pavers. So my question is about the tomatoes.
Send pictures. You might win Arizona staycation.
Well, I can do that.
Okay.
I will definitely do that.
Send pictures to info@rosieonthehouse.com.
I'll do that. Hey, my question is about some tomatoes. I planted tomatoes from seed back at Christmas, grew them in my garden. They got to be about 6 feet tall and about 7-8 feet wide. They look great right now. Obviously, no blooms and no fruit. But I'm wondering, is it worth my time to keep the tomatoes in the garden and try to get some fruit later in the fall? Or should I benefit myself and just tear those tomatoes out, get the garden ready for the fall crops?
My personal opinion?
Yes, sir.
Tear them out.
Okay.
You know, invariably, you hang on to them all summer, and then you do get a nice little crop going in the wintertime, and then we freeze. And unless you're prepared to cover them again and get them to go through that again, and it depends on if you need the space or not. You know, in my particular garden, I just need the room.
Yeah.
So I've done that. I've tried it. It works once in a while. But by and large, I think personally, unless you've got plenty of room and you want to cover and heat and get them through the winter, because getting them through the summer is only half the battle. Then you got to keep them from freezing. It's just tear them out, plant the winter stuff, and then next if you want to start the seed in December again or start plants in January or February, plant your tomatoes then.
Going through all of that to save a tomato plant, that two-year-old plant, there's nothing inherently better about that? Or
it's just bigger and more mature, and it's going to come on. You know, you're going to, it'd be quicker. Like next spring, it's already up and big and, yeah, and going, even if you didn't get any through the winter. But the amount of water that it takes, yeah, to get them, yeah, through the summer, and the space and the fertilizer and everything else, and then, to, you know, unless you can keep them from freezing in the winter. And even last year when it didn't really freeze really hard, it froze just enough that it, a couple that I had that I tried, it froze them. So
I come in Harper's next March or April, and I'm going to spend what on a tomato plant?
Well, you want to do it in February.
Okay,
Or really early March. Okay. And that's the other point. You know, $2, $2.50, $3.
That's when it all starts making sense.
Yeah,
to me.
It's just the economics of how much water did you spend all summer when you can buy a six-pack of them for $3.99. You know, so
all right.
It's not, I don't think it's worth it.
Julie, we were reading a report recently just about the cost of food in America as it relates to other civilized and uncivilized nations across the world. What's your take on that?
I am a complete advocate of celebrating American agriculture because it, with our disposable income, we're probably the most economical. There's one report that came out in one magazine that the United States spends 6.7% of their disposable income, but then Kazakhstan, it's 43.5% of their disposable,
wow,
income. So make that comparison. 43. Yeah. And
I bet they don't have mortgages, though.
Yeah, maybe that.
Well, yeah, probably not, but still. Wow.
That's a huge part of chunk
almost
of your budget.
Half your income, yeah, is for food.
And part of it is our abundance, our food safety. It's the efficiency of it. It's the fact that we have Yuma, Arizona, that provides 90% of our leafy greens. I mentioned it earlier.
When you say our leafy greens, are you talking about Arizona leafy greens or the country's leafy greens?
The country's leafy greens. So my relatives in the Midwest, my friends on the East Coast, are enjoying our Arizona agriculture during the winter. And maybe if they have a greenhouse in their backyard. Yeah. But how many people have that? So if you're eating iceberg lettuce in the dead of winter, most likely it came from Yuma.
And I'm wondering, when they do a study like that, do they just study what I'm spending at the grocery store? Are they spending what I'm spending on food? Because I can't believe, when we grew up, you were at the dinner table with your parents every night. You know, and I hardly know anyone that eats dinner with their family at night. They're grabbing something on the way home at Boston Market, or they're, you know, it's all eat out now.
Right. It's the shopping and the assessment done with the food that we buy and then make at home. And that's where you can really stretch your food budget if we do more of our cooking at home. And you price check and you make comparisons and that kind of, and you use store coupons. Those things are going to help you really maximize your food budget.
Jennifer comes home from the grocery store. She says, "Look what I had to spend for this meat." And I said, "Yeah, that's about 1/4 what you'd pay for it. Have somebody cook it for you."
Yeah, and you can cook it the way you want.
And you cook it the way you want. Right here at Rosie on the House, we're talking vegetable gardens, groceries, and a whole lot more. When we get back, we want to talk about rain lilies and organic weed killers with a call from Gilbert and Tucson.